You're listening to a recorded talk from Greenbelt Festival.
Whether this is something that's a completely new topic to you and you're curious and you spotted it in their programme and thought, I'll go and check that out, whether this is something that you're really familiar with, you're really, really welcome. And we are really pleased to have Legare here with us this afternoon, talking to us about the intersection of Christian faith and the psychedelic community, and the work that they're doing to try and bridge that gap. And hopefully you'll come away more interested, more educated, more aware of what's going on. There will be an opportunity towards the end of this session for questions and answers. So please do start thinking about that. And if something pops into your head, hold on to that. Start trying to work it into a question of a few words now from the beginning. And also just to be aware, and I will try and remember to mention it again, this talk is being recorded. So if you do speak into the microphone, your voice will be captured as part of that recording. So just so you know, if that's a problem, come and speak to me and I'm happy to relay your question for you. You're so, so welcome. Do please shuffle in. It all feels better under the shelter, so do shuffle in if you can. But thank you, and please give a really warm welcome to Legare.
Am I on? I am now. Yeah. Hi, I'm Annette. I'm a UK member of Legare, which was founded in the States. I'm sorry there's so many of us up here, but we just wanted to make this a conversational session. We have some expertise in different ways, but we're not the experts. But we wanted you to hear from a range of the kinds of people who are drawn to this field, this conversation. So you're going to hear short snippets from each of us a bit later on. But because we're in the shelter, there's a request that we offer a little bit of a prayerful time. So we're going to do that to start off with, and then we'll get into hearing from each of the people up here, and then we're going to hear from Ron, who's written a book on the subject, and then we'll have some Q&A. So I hope that it answers some of the questions that you might have.
Hi, I'm Julian. So I hope I'm going to lead you into a little bit of an altered state. As Eugene Peterson used to say, prayer's a subversive activity, so we can have a little bit of that. So you might like to close your eyes. This is going to be 10 minutes-ish. Annette's going to say a little bit halfway through, so there'll be a change of voice. But for now, feel free to close your eyes if you want to. You don't have to. And just listen to the noises that are around. There's a lot going on. We don't want to cut it out or try and push it away. It's just part of what's going on. The thump of the bass, the chatter around. And then coming a little bit closer in, coming into this space. And for these moments in this space, perhaps feeling your connection to the ground, your feet perhaps on the ground, your bottom on the ground. Perhaps if you can reach, putting a hand on the ground, feeling the earth, the grass, the mat. And if you're this way inclined, if it's not too fanciful, you might imagine roots growing out of the soles of your feet, or a root growing out of the base of your spine, rooting you into the ground. This ground, this earth that nourishes us. And you might even imagine drawing up nourishment from the earth. Thank you. And then coming up a little bit higher in the body, coming up to your belly, letting your attention settle in your belly. Just feeling the little movements in here as you breathe. Feeling the rising and the falling, the expanding and contracting. And then coming up to your sternum, your solar plexus, your diaphragm. Really beginning to feel the movement of the breath. And up to your chest, your lungs, and your heart. The breath moves in, the breath moves out. And this is just gently coming up to your shoulders, your neck, up to your head and the top of your head. And maybe feeling a connection down your spine from the top of the head, down the neck, down between your shoulders, down the back, down to the base of the spine, and down into the ground. And gently relaxing into this connection downwards, but also this uprightness, the back upright. And feeling the breath coming and going in through your nostrils or your mouth, into your lungs and chest and out again. And if you were to think at all as you breathe, you might think, as I breathe in and out, I'm a place where life is happening. I breathe in, I breathe out. I am a place where life is happening. And if I'm a place where life is happening, then I'm a place where God is happening. I breathe in. I breathe out. I'm a place where life is happening. I'm a place where God is happening.
And as you sit here in this place of connection, awareness of your breath, awareness of the earth beneath you, I invite you to let rise in you a memory of love. Try not to think about it. Let it come up through your quietened body. This may be a memory of an encounter with another person, a partner, a child, a grandparent. It may be an encounter with a pet or some other being, maybe even a tree. For some of you, it may bring up a memory of a psychedelic experience. But let the memory arise in you, and then let your body feel it. Feel the sensation of love. And if we are a place where life is happening, and we are a place where God is happening, we are also a place where love is happening. And then be aware that everyone around you is also having this experience. They'll all be different, but they'll also be the same. The experience of love. And there may be some people who are struggling with that. So for those of us who are in touch with that feeling of love, we can extend that. We can extend that love and that compassion to anyone here who might be struggling to feel that. And beyond that, to a world that is struggling to feel that. Into that experience of connectedness and interconnectedness, I'm going to drop a few lines of a prayer. Radiant Mother of Life, Source of the Cosmos, come garden with us. Help us clear space within the clutter of our hearts to grow a home for you. In our heart gardens, bring to abundance the fruits of desire and love and hope, deeply rooted in. This connection with you. Let us receive from your breast all we need for this garden to flourish. And may your fecundity be the ground from which we grow. Amen.
Amen.
Thank you for joining us in that. I'm going to say a few words about Legare, what we're hoping to do here, and then I'll hand over to different people in the group. Legare was formed in the US by Hunt Priest, who will be saying a few more words about that, following a piece of clinical research that he took part in. And I came across him when I was researching psychedelics during COVID. And he said a number of things, including, I think spiritual direction is going to be at the heart of this work, and I'm a spiritual director. And I hadn't yet had any experience of psychedelics, but I immediately wanted to be part of that work. And I reached out, we've become friends, and we now have a community of about 70 people in the UK and Europe who are regularly in touch with each other, having this conversation. I want to say up front, we were here last year, and some of the feedback we got was, what about the safety and potential unsafety of this? So it's a given for us that we are talking about the safe and well-held use of psychedelics. There are protocols around that. There are ways of creating a setting, creating preparation for people, looking out for all the possible pitfalls, things that could go wrong. But actually, when you get that right, when you get the setting right, when you get the preparation right, these are very, very safe substances, much safer, for instance, than alcohol. But it is important that we say that up front. We're not here to advocate that everybody does it. We want this to be done safely and with great care. So what we're each going to do, and you can ask questions about that later if you want to, what we're each going to do is give you a little two-minute snippet of who each of us is, what the gifts of our psychedelic experiences have been, and why we're in this conversation, why we're on this stage today. So I'll kick off, and then I'm going to hand over to Hunt. Like I say, I'm Annette. I'm a spiritual director and therapist and artist. I've been working in the spiritual direction field for about 25 years now. And the gifts of psychedelics for me, my experiences, have been that I have been drawn back into my faith. I've been drawn back into the Christian story in a way that I didn't expect. I thought I was on my way out. And I've been drawn into a much deeper sense of connection with the earth and nature, both the beauty of it and the suffering of it. I'm involved in the environmental crisis conversation, and psychedelics have even more deeply brought me into our need to care for our mother, the earth. The reason I'm in this conversation is because I think the world needs it. The world needs us, A, to fall in love with the earth in a way that psychedelics can facilitate. And faith and Christian tradition has got a lot to offer into the space. The church is guilty of all sorts of heinous crimes, but the Christian faith has a thread through it of understanding and being able to be with and help integrate these kinds of experiences. So my hope, since that's the theme of Greenbelt this year, is that these two fields can increasingly come together and have a loving and really juicy conversation. So that's me, Hunt.
Thank you, Annette. Thank you all for being here. So my name is Hunt, and in 2015, I was serving as rector of an Episcopal church in the Seattle, Washington area, and I saw an ad in the magazine Christian Century, which is sort of a liberal, progressive Protestant magazine in the U.S., saw an ad for a study at Johns Hopkins University. They've been doing research with psychedelics and mental health for about 20 years, picking up on the research from the 40s and 50s and 60s. It was ended with the war on drugs, but they picked it back up in 2000, and what they were discovering is that the people that were having the best results for mental depression, anxiety, addiction, fear of dying, trauma, people having the best results with the treatment were having profound spiritual and or religious experiences. So the researchers decided to do a study with 30 religious professionals, Christian clergy, rabbis. There was one Muslim woman. She's actually British, and she was at the time was at Stanford University. She was the only Muslim, and a couple of Buddhists. So Hopkins and New York University were the two sites. They brought us in over the court. It took a long time to fill it up. It took a long time to have it released, but I saw the ad in fall of 2015. Early 2016, I'm in Baltimore at Hopkins in the treatment room, which sort of looks like a living room, but it's really a hospital room, and with the world's foremost psychedelic researchers. And I had no idea really what I was getting into. I just was excited that researchers at Hopkins cared what Christian clergy thought about anything. That's really the truth. And I was just up for the adventure. The two requirements were religious professional in some setting and psychedelically naive. So I was 51. I'd been around psychedelics, had never done them, and I was open. So and I won't give you the details because it's sort of like hearing about somebody's vacation or hearing about somebody's dream or something, so I won't do that. But two experiences a month apart. One was a very embodied, very physically dramatic Kundalini awakening, which is a phrase I did not know until it happened to me. And what I really got out of that was my body tells me everything I need to know, and that the body is truly a temple of the Holy Spirit in a way that I never understood it before. A month later, I'm back at Hopkins, have a very similar embodied experience, but also have the experience of my ordination to the priesthood being completed at the feet of the universe, which I really still don't know what that means, but that was the thought that I had. And I think it was to say expanding of my ministry. So 5 years later, well, I knew it was going to change my ministry. I had no idea how. 5 years later, I realized there needs to be a place for Christians to talk about psychedelics, and the psychedelic community needs a place to learn about the contemplative and mystical traditions within Christianity. So started a charity, a nonprofit called Ligare, which is Latin, the root word. It means to bind or unite. It's also the root word of religion. Ligare.org was available. That was my sign from the gods to name it that, so I did. And that was in 2021, and I didn't know exactly what I was doing. I just started. It was sort of the end of COVID. I started just having online meetings, and here we are. And there's three ways to engage. One is to come by our booth, our stall. We're at the far end of the takeaway area. Come visit us. We're there all weekend. We've got up chairs. We have something called a psychedelic confessional, which is really just a place to come to talk to us about whatever you want to talk about. Do that to connect with the UK group there. You can join our mailing list. There's about 2,500 people on that mailing list in the States, Canada, Mexico, the UK, Europe, Australia. That's information. We do once a month online informational meetings and forums. There's also a way to join, which is from zero to about $150 to be part of a much more intimate with a lot more resources. So go to our website, ligare.org. Stop by the booth. We'd love to talk to you. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your interest.
Yeah, just pass it on. Yeah.
Thanks, Hunt. My name's Hamish, and very quickly, I'd say the big gift and hence our hope from some of these compounds has really been in around one's connection to the soul. So I've really found a deep connection that I just didn't have before through these. And I think the other link to that, the kicker, if you like, is around creativity. I think it's tempting to think that if we have creativity but we don't do anything with it, it's kind of benign. The consequences are benign. I could do that. I could write that. I could paint that. But life gets in the way, whether it's work or, you know. I just wasn't feeling any connection whatsoever to be creative in any form. I just wasn't. And then you know, these compounds have completely unlocked that. So, and that's given a real gift of freedom, of lightness. And there's all these crazy, terrible pictures out there now. And there's some dodgy poems out there. And there's some terrible riffs on the handpan that you might hear. And it's come from absolutely nowhere. And I think it's at one level, that's interesting, isn't it, right? But at another level, it's because things have been unlocked. And that connection between, if you like, the mind, the soul, your essence is a lot clearer. Because you've been skin diving into those waters and come up with some pearls, and those pearls have kind of changed things in a dramatic way. So, hope that makes some sort of sense.
Thank you. Hi everyone. My name is Katie, and I am a medical doctor specializing in psychiatry. And I'm also a clinical research fellow at the Center for Psychedelic Research at Imperial. I got into psychedelics because I should say as well, I was raised Catholic, and I did my Holy Communion. At some point in my teens, I became, for various reasons, I moved away from the church. And was really sensing that I lacked some sort of spiritual foundation in my life, going further up into my 20s. And yeah, it was, I've always been someone that wants to ask the bigger questions, you know, what does it all mean and what is it all for? And was really struggling with feeling quite existential a lot of the time and not really having a framework in which to do anything with that. And then, yeah, I did some training in psychedelic therapy with the Institute of Psychedelic Therapy. And recently have was previously working in NHS mental health services, and have now moved into working in research, looking into psychedelic therapy for mental health conditions. And it's just really struck me from like a personal level, from my own experiences, but also working with other people, how, yeah, there is something quite inherently mystical about psychedelic experiences, and they can really connect us to something quite sacred and divine. And on the theme of hope, I've worked with a lot of people who have really struggled with hopelessness. And through their insights and experiences they've had with psychedelics, they can find ways in which to move through that, or even just identify that as something to be moved through. I think this conversation is really important, just to raise awareness, to address stigma, misinformation that does still exist, and just to, hopefully increase accessibility to people who may benefit from these medicines. Thank you.
Thank you, Katie. So I'm Kathy. I'm a former nurse in acute intensive medicine and in end-of-life care. And I'm now a therapist, a counsellor. And what I'm also originally from a strict Catholic Irish background of immigrants that came over for financial reasons a few generations ago. And what brought me to the psychedelics was probably started with chronic life-limiting health issues and trauma in my family, and being devoted to exploring how we heal. And from there, I went towards a kind of a spiritual exploration of what frees the life force in us, what frees the repressed, traumatic energy that is in our body from trauma. So that's really what brought me to psychedelics eventually. And I've been working personally and within community with psychedelics now since the pandemic. And for me, what my hope is that the psychedelics can free us of that frozen, repressed energy in our bodies that doesn't allow spirit to flow, so that our bodies can become vessels for spirit and we can really find our purpose to make a difference in the world, because the world really needs that. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. My name is Mark, and at the risk of asking everyone put your hand up if, during a psychedelics panel, I'm just really interested, I'm going to try and phrase this in the right way, put your hands up if you're comfortable to put your hand up if you had done psychedelics.
Oh, look at you.
Interesting. And put your hands up if you're Christian. That's interesting. Cool. So the reason I asked that question is, for many years I was stuck between a rock and a hard place among, you know, hippies and ravers who were like, what, you're Christian? That's super weird. Why'd you go to church? And like, an oppressive, homophobic, horror place. Why would you do that? So that kind of typecasting on that hat. And then in church, it's like, what? You do drugs? I even wrote a paper in 2017, which I presented at Breaking Convention, referring to the Christicisms of mystical thrill seeking. But little did I know Ligare was rumbling at that point, and I'm so grateful to be here with you guys now, because this is the intersection that we've really been waiting, I've been waiting for, so thank you. So I'm an anthropologist now, background in theology, and Yeah, I have experience in ceremony settings of the Native American Church and the Santo Daime, who are Christian syncretic groups with recreational kind of UK free festival, free party movements, and also in a clinical setting. I've done it a couple of times, being given them as a healthy normal. Little did they know I was actually healthy abnormal, but that's fine. So yeah, it's funny that there's a gap at all, you know, Ligare bridging the gap between the psychedelic world and the Christian world, in what used to be called the New World. I don't think there is so much of a gap because they have natives there who do these, I got told off once for saying doing these plants. Actually, they're in relationship with these plants and have been for thousands of years. But in the used to be called the old world here now, the only relationships we can have with these substances, at least culturally, historically, have been either kind of recreational party relationships with them or purely clinical. So I think that's why, especially in the UK and in Europe, there is this divide between people who are members of a traditionally prescribed religion or religious community and then who also enjoy encountering the divine through altering their states of consciousness. But obviously we're made of drugs. I don't know if anyone knows this, but we're made of drugs. That's why they work. We knew about LSD before we knew about serotonin. LSD helped us understand what serotonin was. We knew about cocaine and amphetamine before we knew about adrenaline and dopamine. These receptor sites are in our bodies because we have endocrines and we've always been mitigating deficits in our endocrine cycles and ratios with various herbs and plants and foods, and animals across the animal kingdom do this too. That's not to normalize what is actually really quite an abnormal experience, but it is to say, or even to say that it's inevitably safe, but neither is, what was it David Nutt said? Horse riding. So, yeah, and I guess one of the things I'm interested in particular as an anthropologist, my PhD is looking at, so in the 60s, the new left was riven by this divide. You also had psychedelics on the right. That's a whole other story, but change yourself and society will change. So change your inner life and the agglomeration that forms society will somehow change, or change the structures at play and then individual selves will change. So you had, you know, the yippies, this is quite crudely drawn, but the yippies and the hippies, right? But the truth is we wouldn't really have the racial rights, the gender rights, sex before marriage would still be incredibly frowned upon. We wouldn't have the rights to protest and all these things if it weren't for the hippies. We kind of forget that sometimes, think that it was a kind of completely impotent political movement taken over by neoliberalism and consumed. And partly it was, but we also have loads of these hard-fought rights, partly because of the energy that psychedelics brought society. So I think it's important to recognize that. But if we're talking about cognitive liberty, which I'm a huge proponent of, that is the right that every human being ought to have to experiment with their consciousness as they see fit with plants and molecules in their environment, provided they're given the correct education. One of the critiques from the right at the moment is looking, why do we prioritize liberty above other things like duty or loyalty to nation, things like that? And I think that point is to some extent well met, but they're obviously dialectically related. So if we have cognitive liberty to experiment with our minds, what is the cognitive responsibility that comes with that to create the kind of world that is worth coming down into? So thank you. Yeah, I'm going to pass the mic on and stop. I just want to end with a Heschel quote that's always inspired me. Within our awe, we only know that all we own, we owe. Thank you.
We could all talk for hours on this, but... Laura?
Go for it.
Yeah. Okay.
Hi, I'm Laura. I'm a secondary school teacher. I teach theology. And the reason I came to psychedelics was for a therapeutic reason. I was very interested in mental health and trauma. And as was mentioned before, psychedelics was having a lot of success with in realms that weren't amenable to standard treatments. And so I was really curious about it. And I eventually got the courage to actually take the jump and have the experience. And I'm profoundly grateful for, surprisingly, the way how it knit so neatly to my Christian faith and to the journey that I was already on, to the way that God had already been speaking to me, and to the huge challenge of complete trust and faith and surrender. And so I viewed this mushroom journey as very much God's provision for me for healing. And so I was taking it. I was basically saying, yes, yes, Lord. And it was, for me, it was a leap of faith. And that leaping and making sense of that leap is a continuing process. So why does it give me hope? I think it gives me hope because I know that the mental health issues are huge. And there's so many people who feel like they're getting it wrong or there's nothing they can do. There's no hope for them. And I see psychedelics is offering that hope. And also all of this, one of the reasons why it's done safely is because it's done in community. And just as we trust and surrender to God in the mushrooms, we trust and surrender to one another, to care for us, to love us, to look after us. And that has been the great blessing. And that's why we're here together, is because actually it's not just an individual experience. It's about everyone blessing each other as we make this journey together. Thank you.
Yeah, my name is Ron, and we're going to go next to your questions, so be sure you've got them in mind. I taught theology for 35 years in American seminaries, in preparation for clergy. And I grew up kind of in an evangelical home in the U.S. where we talked about God and the Holy Spirit and the movement of the Holy Spirit and the presence and things like that. Well, as a result of my own seminary training, and I'm sad to say, confess that I passed this on almost entirely to all the students. Experiential stuff really wasn't important. What was important was the more rational interpretation of Scripture and formation of dogmatic. You've all run into churches like that, I'm sure. Along comes retirement, and simultaneously, I'm reading about some of the stuff like what Hunt was describing, the experiments at Johns Hopkins, for instance, or the kind of work that Katie is involved with at Imperial. Absolutely terrific work. Science method applied to the what these substances do in the human body and brain. Neuroscience, brain imaging, but also medical research as well, looking for patterns of that support the case for mental health healing. And it's absolutely stunning. If you haven't been paying attention, I really encourage you to pay attention to the scope of mental health conditions that may someday be treated by psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy, coupling what we know about psychotherapy with substances that bring about an extraordinary openness and flexibility and freedom from old ideas and willingness to embrace new ideas. Well, all of that is summarized in the first part of this book. They told me it was okay to lift up the book and pitch it here. I'm not sure where you would get a copy. So that's all summarized in the first part of the book. Then the second part of the book goes to kind of the, oh gosh, what do Christians say about mystical, spiritual experiences? And by and large, it's not very positive. More positive in Orthodoxy, more positive in among Catholics than among Protestants. I mean, Luther, etc. Wesley is an exception, but so many Protestants basically are just phobic when it comes to the spiritual, to the mystical, and they distrust it. You know, God has spoken in the Bible. What, you know, why do you need mystical experiences to listen to the divine? Well, yeah, all right. So I work through that and try very hard to build a bridge back to a positive theological assessment of the importance of mystical spiritual experiences. Whether I succeed, Yeah, it depends on how people read it. The final part of the book is an appeal to church leaders in particular. It's not limited to church leaders. If you're, if you've had an awakening experience, whether it's a near-death experience or anything else that's been the pathway or psychedelic drugs, I hope there's stuff in here for you. But it's particularly for church leaders who get the call and say, look, I just had this really weird experience, and I need to talk to somebody. Does it have something to do with the faith of my childhood? I've left for all these good reasons, right? It just was intolerable. It was abusive. It was a sham. People leave church for lots of really important reasons. My hope is that among the transformations going on in present-day society, this weird stuff, psychedelics, LSD, psilocybin especially, mushrooms, other substances as well, will trigger a moment of awakening in which people begin to ask questions. And when they ask questions of church leaders, what the hell are you going to say? And if you don't know what to say, of course, you can buy a book. But but I end with the appeal, be bold. You don't have to know everything. Just listen, just accompany, just validate, just create a safe space, just grow with, because I'm convinced the church will be healed, not just our relationship with nature, I mean, that's absolutely critical, but the church itself will be healed by the witness of people who have encountered the presence of love, the presence of divine, through these funny little things called psychedelics.
Am I still on? I'm still on. Yeah. So we're now going to open up for questions. I just want to say what a joy it's been. And I'm so glad we did it this way. This is our community. I mean, it's just a small part of it. But in the psychedelic field, despite the fact that it's about substances and taking substances, the constant refrain is the community is the medicine. And as Laura said so beautifully, this is what we do. We heal together. And it's been a joy to do this together. So thank you. Can you run around?
Yeah. Okay. So yeah, put your hand up and we'll get a mic to you. And then you could use that one. Sorry.
Hello? Yeah. So if you put your hand up, we'll get a mic to you, and you can ask just an open question, or you might have heard somebody say something and you want to ask a bit more of that person, so you could point them out or name them, and we'll pass the mic around. I can see somebody at the back there.
Just to say as well, this talk is being recorded, so if you speak into the microphone, your voice is recorded, so you're hopefully okay with that if you are doing that. And due to it being recorded and us using a hearing loop, please wait for me to get to you with the microphone before you start speaking. Thank you.
Thank you. Hi. Listening to the talk, it seemed I get a balance of some people going towards maybe psychotherapy, well, helping in the mind, and others spiritual. And I'm wondering, there's different settings these can be, basically, bearing that in mind, there's a different, I'm very sorry about this, I'm very confused, I'm trying to get it right. Okay, what settings do you recommend or do you think is best to take to psychedelics for your spiritual journey? Are we talking 50, 60 type of sitting on a couch? We're talking in a long house, having a communion together? Or you're talking Mad Monk going up on top of a pole? Tripping you, whatever, off.
I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all approach to this, but I think that there are plenty of safe options in each of the paradigms that you have. So, and I guess, you know, the most kind of middle-class and expensive paradigm is the retreat one, which incorporates all of the other paradigms together. So that incorporates recreation and ceremony, and there will usually be a medical professional present. But yeah, my instinct is, and this is literally, this is like a theory from my ethnographic experience. They're just purely based on my observations. So don't take this as read. Would be if you have a perhaps more open personality type, high an openness, then festival settings would be okay for you. But if you're high in, say, neuroticism, then maybe a ceremony space or a clinical space might be more conducive. But there are also unsafe spaces in all of those contexts as well. So it's really important to make sure that you instinctively, I think the most important thing is that you trust the people that you're with on a deep, deep level. Because there's a lovely word I know, pronoia. Has anyone heard of this word? The sneaking suspicion that everyone's secretly out to help you. That's what you want. It doesn't matter the context or the paradigm, you know, whether it's scientific or religious.
I'll just add to that that some of us, so Legare is not involved in retreat giving or in handling these substances because of their charitable status in the States. But some of us take off the Legare hat and put on a different hat on occasion and run legal retreats in the Netherlands. And so we do it in community there, and we also have one-on-one conversations. We have small group conversations. We do lots of preparation with people first, including health assessments and all of that. Then we go away on retreat. We have some preparation there. We do the ceremony. We have some integration, a day and a half of integration afterwards, and then some further Zoom sessions of integration. So it comes as a package. And all within a what we call a Christic or Christian setting. So we say Christian prayers together. We have a Eucharist on either side of the ceremony together. And it's powerful. It's good stuff. Somebody at the front here.
What have you next?
Having grown up with a father who was an alcoholic all of my growing up years, but was a deeply spiritual person, I recognize that about him. And until he was able to, what he would call, overcome his demon of addiction, he just could not stop. And for him, it was alcohol. Now, what would be the risks for somebody who has a propensity toward addiction to use psychedelic drugs?
I'm going to let Katie think about this, and I'm going to answer it in part myself. I do know that there is research happening with psychedelics for addiction. So that, again, handled well and properly and safely, they can be an antidote to addiction, because something I think that I understand about addiction and what the Alcoholics Anonymous understands is it's a spiritual crisis. You know, that's how, I mean, you get there and then you're stuck and you're dependent. But what gets you there is a kind of spiritual crisis. And so there is, as I understand it, there's some research happening. These are completely non-addictive substances. Far less addictive. Well, they're just not addictive, so I shouldn't say far less. They are not addictive. They're not in a physically dependent way. I think the danger is some people could think, oh, well, I want to have that experience again. But you know what? I've seen that in church, you know, where people turn up every week at church for another hit of the Holy Spirit. And so it could be that, where you're not going back into your life and integrating it and learning to live with the experience. You're just coming back for more. But they're not, in a physical way, addictive. Katie, do you have...
Oh, I think Kathy did as well. Oh. But Katie...
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I can just quickly say that I've been working with somebody who was, until 7 years ago, a narcotics addict and had been working with narcotics, AA, narcotics recovery. And he just was so committed to his trauma healing. He saw that the 12 steps program maintains your sobriety, but doesn't get to your trauma healing. And So he's actually moved away from Narcotics Anonymous, and there is a psychedelics in recovery version of the 12 steps that supports people who want to do psychedelics for their trauma recovery, but have an addiction that they have also recovered from.
Thank you. Yeah, just to add, there is increasing evidence in favour of the use of psychedelic therapy for addiction disorders, and that's substance addiction, but also increasingly behavioural addiction as well, like gambling disorder, for example. And it's very interesting, and there is, yeah, emerging research that I think there's actually a big clinical trial that's now in phase three in the UK, looking at ketamine-assisted therapy for alcohol use disorder, which is finding positive results. It's interesting to say, yes, it's most psychedelics are not. I will just say there is one psychedelic, or it's considered a psychedelic, which is ketamine, which has got known addictive properties, or it can be addictive for people, and that is something to bear in mind. So like that, while used safely in a kind of a controlled setting, that it can be beneficial, but recreationally there can be more risk of harms with dependency. But yes, indeed, like most of psychedelics like psilocybin, LSD, they're not associated particularly with being addictive. They're quite, yeah, big experiences. Often people may not feel like they want to have another one for a while after, yeah, just leave that for a bit. But it is, yeah, it's a very interesting field of research at the moment.
Say one quick thing. I think it's also Bill Wilson, who started AA, worked with LSD, and it was at the time and even now not really part of AA orthodoxy. But there's a history in AA with Bill Wilson with psychedelics. So it's, you know, the higher power part. So
yeah, and just very quickly, the easy way to understand it, sort of to summarize the neuroscience, the best explanation to me that was said by a friend of mine who's got an addiction issue was, he was almost like the top of a hill that he had to ski down. And all he could see were these big ruts that he'd skied before many, many times. And he desperately didn't want to follow those ruts. But he couldn't get, once he was in the rut, he couldn't get out of it. The walls of the ruts were too high. And he found these substances effectively like a massive dump of snow on the mountain. So he could ski whatever direction he wanted to ski, and he couldn't even see the ruts. And that opened up so many more possibilities, all because of the work they do on the brain, neuroplasticity.
I do have a quick thing to say on this, but
okay,
is that all right?
Well, I'm aware of other people wanting to ask questions. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I think maybe you can put it in the next question. Yeah, yeah.
Over here, there was somebody. This man here has had his hand up for a while.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, in the very back.
No, here.
Here, and then the man in the back.
Hi.
Hello. Hi.
Hello. Yeah. I have so many questions, but I'll keep it to a couple.
Come and visit us.
Yeah, I will. Yeah. when you're all talking, I was getting the impression that you sort of favored like psychedelic mushrooms over other types of psychedelics. I may have been wrong. Do you think it's better to do a natural substance like psilocybin mushrooms or Hawaiian mushrooms, whatever, as opposed to doing LSD as a chemical? The reason I'm asking is obviously mushrooms are seasonal and you can get LSD all year round. That's the first part.
My experience so far is only with psilocybin. So I'm going to ask somebody who's... You can...
There's a lot of like puritanism in this in the field. If you ask people, no, only natural. I mean, on the one hand, you know, if you know that it's the right mushroom, then it's safe. Whereas you're not, you know, unless you have a drug testing kit, you're not entirely sure that the chemicals is the right one. I mean, they do have subtly different effects. So LSD is a lot more dopaminergic than psilocybin, which for some people can mean that they become a lot more anxious, but for other people
like myself, I had one PLSD when it was legal, and you can bring more will into the trip, if that makes sense. So with mushrooms, you let reality flow past you and you can have a conversation with a tree, and that's great. But on LSD, the tree might be flowing and everything, but it's not as interesting as a painting or a film or a human cultural item. So that's just my personal experience. So they definitely have different profiles. And then, of course, it's not just about the drug. I mean, the context is everything. So my experience, ceremony contexts tend to be much more about doing the work. If the senior people in the ceremony are living in alignment, then it will very much be a moral, ethical process of self-betterment. Whereas an experience going to an art gallery or going it might be more artistic and aesthetic and philosophical in intention. And then, of course, in the medical sphere, there's a very particular pathology that you're trying to get past or through. But also, I do think that in the West, we have this kind of quite a toxic attitude towards intoxication. It's even in the word intoxication. Why do we need to borrow from tomorrow to have tonight and drink ourselves silly and then feel horrible tomorrow? Whereas a lot of cultures that use psychedelics, they see it as, you know, if you put in the work tonight, there'll be more of you to give tomorrow. That's a much, you know, it's very difficult in the West when we have such toxic intoxicants as a normal, like alcohol is probably the most toxic drug we know. You can die from withdrawal. As the norm, then it's very difficult to imagine a world where that attitude or that culture could change, because the drug action and the culture are co-causal, right? But in theory, if we did have a culture where psychedelics were more normalized, you would then have a culture where you're not burning yourself out. You're not borrowing from tomorrow to have tonight. You could give it your all tonight and have more tomorrow. And I think that's something I'd love to see a shift in. Yeah.
I think we've got time for one more. And then we're going to have a moment of... Okay. All right. Yeah. Somebody in the back.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, he has.
I'm going for you.
thank you. I'm just picking up on something. Sorry, I forgot your name. Mr. Anthropologist Man. Mark, thank you, Mark. About cultures living with drugs for a very long time, multi-generational, thousands of years. I read The Myth of Normal by Gabor Mate recently, in which he recounts going to South America and taking an ayahuasca trip, going several days, really going deep into himself, unearthing all this kind of this trauma that was hidden, and he came to understand himself. But the point he made at the end was that that we in the West can have a habit of decoupling a culture away from the drug itself, and how that can make it more dangerous and less effective to use. So I suppose my real question is what you think of that, and how in the West we avoid the commoditization of something to make it quantity over quality.
Briefly, please.
Huge question. That's a huge question. Yeah. For someone else.
Ron, is there anything you want to say about that? Do you want to go for
Well, it's hard to add. I mean, that was so beautifully expressed. But you're absolutely right that we have to be very careful about isolating, putting all the focus on the substance used by an individual outside of a tradition or a cultural setting. In fact, one of the things I'm exploring at the moment is to the extent to which our wider culture actually runs counter to the best effects of a profoundly positive psychedelic experience. It's connectional. It brings you into harmony with yourself, with neighbors. It's communitarian almost by its inner properties. And then you go back into this culture, which emphasizes individuality, autonomy, you're responsible for your situation in life, et cetera, kind of a Neolithic cultural matrix. So it seems to me that one of the big challenges is not simply to surround the ceremony or the moment of the journey with cultural resources, which are very lacking in the West, but in the aftermath, in the period that comes afterward, I'm talking about a month or two or 3 months in particular, but well beyond that, offering cultural alternatives to the default culture of modernity, which again I'm suggesting can be almost antithetical, caustic to the best results of the psychedelic experience. So I'm wondering if one of the future avenues for Ligari and for this effort to bring together Christianity and psychedelics is to offer exactly that kind of a nourishing cultural alternative to the nihilism and the emptiness, the extreme individuality of modern culture. Offer an alternative to that in which people can safely and meaningfully unpack the most profound dimensions of their spiritual experience, drawing on deep cultural resources, but most of all, face-to-face contact with other like-minded people right in their own community.
Thank you so much. I know there are still so many of you I know with questions, and so as they've said, please do go and visit them in the takeaway. Do stop by. I know that they would love to chat more with you, so please do. But can we say a really warm thank you to Ligari?
Thanks so much for listening to this recorded talk. Explore our full Greenbelt Festival Talks archive with almost 20 years of recorded talks and podcasts for free at greenbelt.org.uk/talks.